This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, September 24th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we spend some time with the Arkansas Griffins, a men's rugby club based in Northwest Arkansas. Plus, singer-songwriter Jay Wagner stops by the studio for a conversation and a performance. And our own Ithi Agnihotri-Madolker bids us a bittersweet goodbye. All that and more, but first, numbers released Friday show Arkansas's unemployment rate last month remained the same as the month before, holding steady at 7.3%. Kimberly Friedman is a spokeswoman for the Arkansas Workforce Services Department.
The civilian labor force did contract and got smaller in August, but the declines in both employment and unemployment were enough to actually cause the rate to remain the same. This isn't anything, you know, alarming or anything actually out of the ordinary for August. Over the last 10 years, the rate here in Arkansas for the month of August actually has stayed the same six different times. So this is nothing out of the ordinary.
The national unemployment rate fell by 0.2 percentage point from 8.3% in July to 8.1% in August. Two street improvement projects in Rogers are moving forward, though property acquisitions are still ongoing. The improvement of Montanay Road between New Hope Road and the downtown area is split into two portions. According to planning documents from the city's website, the southern portion of the project ends just south of Pinion and Gum Streets and will expand the roadway from two lanes to four and include sidewalk improvements. Steve Glass is the city's director of planning and transportation.
The northern portion of it will be more like a boulevard, kind of a gateway or an entryway into the city. There are some dangerous curves and intersections that we have on the existing Montanay Road. That'll be straightened out, which was actually going to involve rerouting the road and buying some homes. But it's when we're through, we'll have a nice boulevard there. We'll have some nice safe turns and radiuses so you can get into the city.
Glass says the current goal with the project is to acquire the necessary properties for the project so that utilities can be relocated. He says the project could take up to 2 years to complete, and he hopes construction will start next summer. In total, the Montanay expansion project is estimated to cost about $16 million. But Montanay Road is not the only street improvement project the city is working on. City planners are also working on an expansion project for First Street between West Ulrich and Arkansas Streets.
We've got more property required on the Montanay. We've been working on that one. We're just really starting on the First Street. The design is pretty much complete, probably 95% on this First Street project, and we're just now starting to acquire the properties. So we're not as far along on that, but they should be easier to acquire. There's only a couple of houses that we're actually having to take.
Glass says the Arkansas State Highway Transportation Department is considering including First Street as part of a larger eastern north-south corridor between U.S. Highway 62 in Benton County and Arkansas Highway 16 in Washington County. Though the actual route of the eastern bypass is not finalized, the city will construct the First Street improvements to comply with road construction standards set by the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials.
There's really not that much difference. We widened it to five lanes. You have a lot of truck traffic through there, a lot of trucking companies that are down in that area, and so it makes sense to go ahead and widen it. But there are some things like radiuses and section, cross-section and materials and stuff that the highway department uses that we're adding into that just in case they decide to go that route.
Both improvement projects are part of a $135 million bond issue that residents voted on in September of 2011. Of the total bond money, $102 million were designated to go towards street improvements. The Northwest Arkansas Food Bank last week received some help from employees at the Nielsen office in Bentonville. Melissa Vest is the food bank's development director.
I believe that for their one day afternoon for their office, it was around $160, which at the food bank, whenever you donate a dollar, it buys five meals for people in need.
Vest says the $160 collected at the Nielsen office can provide about 800 meals for people in need. The money was collected as part of a fundraising program operated by the food bank called Share Your Lunch Money.
We have piggy banks for offices in the local area to give up their lunch money for a day, a week, month, whatever they would like to do.
To make every dollar the food bank receives pay for five meals, Vest says the organization has a few ways it can keep costs down.
We are actually part of the Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance, and we are a Feeding America food bank. And so we're able to pull our resources as well as purchase food on the secondary market and buy the truckload. So whenever we buy in bulk like that or split bulk orders, then we're able to buy a lot more and have purchasing power that an individual wouldn't.
Vest says going into the holiday months, any assistance the food bank can receive is appreciated. According to figures released today by the University of Arkansas College of Engineering, a record number of students enrolled in the college again this year. The college reported that 2,726 undergraduate students are enrolled in the engineering school, representing a 73% enrollment increase since 2007. That enrollment total includes a record-breaking 775 freshmen, a nearly 12% increase over fall 2011 numbers. The Razorback women's soccer team tied 1-1 in double overtime against South Carolina yesterday at Razorback Field in Fayetteville. Including a 3-2 win over number 18 team Kentucky, the Razorbacks have won 4, lost 5, and tied 1 overall. But in Southeastern Conference play, the team has won 1, lost 2, and tied 1. The Hogs will return to the road this week, playing at Tennessee Friday and then at Florida on Sunday. The Razorback volleyball team added another win to its total over the weekend, winning in 3 sets over Georgia in Athens. With the win, the team improved to 2-1 in conference play and 11-3 overall. The team will return home for the coming weekend, facing Auburn and LSU. In track and field action, the U of A cross-country team finished 2nd Saturday morning at the Virginia Panorama Farms Invitational in Earliesville, Virginia. The Razorbacks had runners place 1st, 3rd, and 5th in the 8K. Arkansas will return to the track in 3 weeks on October 12th at the Wisconsin Adidas Invitational in Madison, Wisconsin, and on October 13th at the Chili Pepper Festival in Fayetteville. And the Razorback golf team finished the first round of the P&G Golf Week preview on Sunday, tied for 6th place in team standings. Freshman Taylor Moore shot 2 under par to tie for 2nd place in the individual rankings. The number 7 Razorbacks continue into round 2 today at the Capital City Club, paired against golfers from Washington and California. Tonight's weather forecast calls for partly cloudy skies with a low of 70 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley and a low of 64 and a 20% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow, there is a 20% chance of rain and thunderstorms with a high of 86 degrees in northwest Arkansas. Expect clear skies in the Arkansas River Valley with a high of 93 degrees. Tomorrow night, expect mostly cloudy conditions with a low of 72 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley and a low of 64 degrees and a 20% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas. For years, the large grassy fields behind Kirksey Middle School in Rogers have been the site of games and practices for various sports such as soccer and football. Today, one of the fields is being occupied by the Arkansas Griffins rugby team.
So we're cutting in. I took it on my chest and I shouldn't have done. I go to you guys, let's get on dirty. So we're cutting back in. But make sure we're going straight first and then cut it. Get our hands ready, let's go.
Get Tucker.
Good, better. Come on.
23-year-old Tucker Shaw is the president of the Division III Men's Rugby Club. Hailing from Dallas, Shaw played rugby in high school and then for the Razorbacks at the University of Arkansas. After that, he was recruited to play for the Red Ruth Reds in Cornwall, England.
It was fun, absolutely. And it was definitely there to kind of broaden my horizons on the sport and come back here and really try and make it, because in 2016, the next Olympics, we'll have rugby in the Olympics for the first time since like 1930 or something. So it'll be pretty incredible to have that back in. And during the summer, our off-season program, we play sevens, which is a different form of rugby. So like on football, you have regular football during the season, then you have 7-on-7. Well, similar to rugby, you have 7-on-7 rugby players with the same size pitch, and it's just a lot of the more skilled positions. The sevens will be in the Olympics in 2016, and so a lot of these tournaments that we go to and play for, they have USA Rugby recruits that are actually recruiting players to go in to play at the national level. And so right now, every single tournament that we go to and every single game that we play, there's somebody there that is a representative for USA Rugby that's trying to recruit them.
Stateside, Shaw explains the league to which the Griffins belong is divided into unions. The Griffins are part of the Heart of America Union, which means they typically face teams from Missouri and Kansas. Because they are a club team, dues are required for participants.
Dues aren't expensive. For equipment, all you got to do is buy a mouthpiece and a pair of kicks that you can borrow off of anybody. I mean, half of the stuff that everybody's wearing here is all borrowed or traded at one game or another. So that's kind of the tradition as the game's played. If you don't know the background of rugby, it's very after a match, your team that hosts you, they host you at the bar as well. And so they bring you back and they feed you, and then you go out with them the night before and get drunk for whoever knows how long. So it's always a very camaraderie driven sport. And so you'll see that, while the people are on the pitch, the field's called the pitch. While people are on the pitch, they're fighting and beating the hell out of each other. But then, you go to the bar afterwards and we're singing songs and drinking beer and eating food together.
Shaw says the Griffins play a form of the sport called rugby union, where there are 15 players on each side. Athletes run forward on the pitch with an oval-shaped ball and are allowed to pass backward or to the side. Matches consist of two 40-minute halves, and points are earned by scoring a try or a goal. A try is when the player takes the ball across the goal line and grounds the ball, and this is worth 5 points. A goal is scored by kicking the ball between the uprights, and this can be worth 2 or 3 points, depending on the situation. Shaw says recruiting for the Arkansas Griffins is typically by word of mouth. The club provides a way for athletes who played rugby at the University of Arkansas or John Brown University to continue playing after graduation. The club is open to anyone who wants to play, regardless of experience, and Shaw says the sport can appeal to entire families.
Rugby all around, it's very family-oriented. You always think of it as kind of a hooligan sport, and you're just going out there and drinking beer and singing songs. As you see, we have kids that come out here. We got a lot of high school youngsters that come out here, because if you're 16 and older, you can come out here and play as long as you have a release form. So, our primary goal as a club, as a community here, is to have that youth side. USA Rugby as an organization is promoting youth rugby all the way up before high school level. So at boys and girls clubs and everything, that's your primary spot to try and get kids involved with the sport like it is overseas. And especially, with it being an Olympic sport, sponsors, Nike, everybody, it's going to start becoming a more, think of World Cup when that happens around. Everybody's all jumping about it. So it's very, very exciting. But what's awesome is seeing this on a Saturday when, everybody's wives and wife and girlfriend, kids and everything is out there playing and cheering everybody on. It's a good, and then alumni, you'd be surprised, all the alumni that come out from the Razorbacks and John Brown University, they come out and support us, and it's just full sidelines like if you had a Razorback football game or something. It's very impressive.
Rugby can be a rough sport, but Shaw says learning the basics can help keep you safe.
A lot of the new guys, they don't know how to hit somebody properly. So if you're a football player, you're automatically going to spear somebody and lead with your head or something like that. And this is more, I always explain it to a wrestling takedown. I had a background in wrestling, and I always try and teach people that's a proper way to tackle someone rather than lunging your body at them. But, all you're doing is try and protect yourself, and you're not going to get hurt. There's really no right or wrong way to it. It's just learning about the fundamentals. And Coach Mike Brogan, he's really good about teaching the fundamentals. He had he was the head coach for a developmental program in a rugby league over in England, which is a very high professional form of rugby. And he's very good about teaching fundamentals, fundamentals, fundamentals. Because no matter how long you do that in a practice, it can never get old. You're always going to learn fitness. You're always going to learn something.
Although athletes can play with caution, even the most experienced player can get hurt. During this early evening practice, a slender man wearing sunglasses, a bright aqua-colored dress shirt, and khaki pants stands in the middle of the field and watches his teammates practice passing drills.
Tiger, slow down there, pass a little.
Adam Price is the Griffins' team captain, and he's not participating in today's practice because of an injury inflicted during the previous weekend's game.
Well, I dislocated my kneecap again, so
It's happened a few times.
Sounds awful.
The first time it was. The second time, yeah, it gets less painful each time.
Price is a New Zealand native who began playing rugby around the age of 5. He moved to Northwest Arkansas about a year and a half ago and says one of the first things he did was find the local rugby team because it's a great way to meet people. Rugby involves little protective gear, and Price says it's not his mouth guard that's his best form of protection on the pitch.
We can always compare it to football, you know, but you always know where the confrontation's coming from. You know, you're not getting blindsided, and you're not getting, you know, you've obviously got to protect yourself as well, but I think my brain's my best protector out there.
Price says it takes a lot to learn how to play the game because it's relatively complicated and has so many rules and nuances that you can't just explain the game at one practice. He says it takes even the best athletes a while to acquire the detailed skills they need to be really good players. The Griffins have team members ranging in age from teenagers to men in their late 30s. Some of the athletes are new to the sport, but some, like Price, have years of experience. So what is it about the sport of rugby that inspires Price to continue playing?
I mean, there's all those token team things, you know, the camaraderie, the going into battle together, the training together, the staying the fitness together. But, I mean, it's as much of a cliche as it is. It's actually true, you know. Like, you got 20 mates pretty much, and pretty much straight away. Just from going out in the team and the achievement of playing a good game and winning and even losing is it's a real unique experience, especially in rugby, because it's so physically demanding that you're sore afterwards, and you know, so you have that achievement as well. It's like, I've done something with my day.
The Arkansas Griffins practice twice a week, and dues are $200 annually. They meet at Kirksey Middle School in Rogers on Tuesdays and Holt Middle School in Fayetteville on Thursdays. Home matches are played at Walker Park in Fayetteville. The Griffins' next home match is at 2 o'clock Saturday when they face the Kansas City Islanders. More information is available at arkansasgriffins.com.
Yeah, mate.
Go, go, go.
Yeah. Kelly. Yeah, Kale.
It's Monday, September 24th, 2012, and this is Ozarks at Large. Joining me now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hey!
Hello.
Feel like I haven't seen you for a while.
I know.
How's Gridiron going?
It's going.
It's going.
It's going.
Coming up the first weekend of October, the journalists of Northwest Arkansas being crazy and making fun of everybody else. I intended to do it this year, but I'll be there cheering you on.
Well, I appreciate that.
There's some cool stuff going on tonight, too.
Okay.
There's an event at the Siloam Springs Museum today at 2 o'clock teaching you how to research your Indian roots.
Okay.
You can call 524-4011 to find out more about that.
That's interesting.
There's a book signing tonight with Stephen Hunter. He's the photographer and author of Mount Magazine, Looking for the Light. What a nice
you
man.
You talked to him, right?
I did.
Earlier this year.
Nice man, beautiful photos. He's signing books at 7 o'clock tonight at the Janet Huckabee River Valley Nature Center in Barling. And it's hosted by the Arkansas Trailblazers Hiking Club.
Okay.
And the Jimmy Herring Band performs at 9 o'clock tonight at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. Jimmy Herring has been a guitarist for groups like the Aquarium Rescue Unit and Widespread Panic. And he will be in town with a new group, following his solo release, Subject to Change Without Notice. $15.
Right.
If you don't believe me, read Kevin Kinder's blog, because I don't understand music.
That's all right. Music is music, and you can find it at George's. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. State lawmakers heard from Arkansas Treasurer of State Martha Shoffner on Monday to answer questions about her office's investment policies. At the hearing, a key senior manager in Shoffner's office asked about whistleblower status. An audit report issued a week ago by the Arkansas Division of Legislative Audit raised issues with business practices in Shoffner's office. Shoffner has steered an extraordinary amount of investment business to St. Bernard Financial Services in Russellville. The audit report found significant deficiencies, with how several large bond transactions were conducted. Schaffner will appear again before legislators in October to answer more questions regarding the office and its conduct. Governor Mike Beebe, Little Rock, and Fort Smith will host a delegation from the Chinese city of Jining on October 3rd and 4th. The announcement was made by Fort Smith Mayor Sandy Sanders at this week's city board meeting. Sanders said nine municipal officials from the Chinese province known for mining and manufacturing would tour Fort Smith, the Clinton Presidential Library, and meet with Governor Beebe at the governor's mansion. Arkansas's civilian labor force contracted for the third straight month, but the state's August jobless rate remained steady at 7.3%. The unemployment rate in Arkansas is 0.8% below the 8.1% rate from August of a year ago. The measurement was 7.3% in July 2012 also. U.S. unemployment fell 0.2% in August to 8.1%. 117 employees of the Arkansas Military Department are being told that their jobs will be eliminated in the next year to year and a half. According to Major Chris Heathscott with the Arkansas National Guard, the job loss is a result of a change in federal regulations at the National Guard Bureau in Arlington, Virginia. The new regulations no longer allow state employees to perform tasks that solely support National Guard operations. A $5 million gift from the Tyson family and Tyson Foods will establish a research and residency program at Bentonville's Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. The Tyson Scholars of American Art will bring scholars to Bentonville to research the history of American art by using the museum's permanent collection and library. Scholars will interact with Crystal Bridges staff and the community and will collaborate with the University of Arkansas. After unceremoniously announcing it would close nearly half of the USA drug stores it purchased in June, Walgreens said the transaction has officially concluded. Walgreens, one of the largest drugstore chains in the U.S., acquired USA Drug and several additional entities from Pine Bluff-based Stephen L. LaFrance Holdings and members of the LaFrance family in June. The $438 million deal brought 144 stores, corporate offices, and a distribution center under the Walgreens umbrella. The acquisition included locations in Arkansas, Kansas, Mississippi, Missouri, New Jersey, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. Last week, Walgreens disclosed it would shut down 76 drugstores as part of the deal, including 27 outlets in Arkansas. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me in Studio 123 is Jay Wagner, singer-songwriter from Austin. Welcome back.
It's good to be back. Thank you very much.
Some of our listeners are familiar with you from the Roots Festival. You were kind enough to play during our live show at the library, and then you were just all over the place during the whole weekend.
It's ADD.
You performed a couple of times, and you taught two-step lessons.
Yep.
You were just all over the place. So what did you think?
I've actually been at the festival for the last 3 years.
Oh, you were for the last three years. So why do you keep coming back then?
Mainly because they keep asking me to come back. So I just come back every year. And this year I didn't even ask to come back. They just sent me an email and said, here's when you're playing. So I was like, yeah, I'm free. Cool. You know, and then they organized everything else. And of course, I love it. So I would cancel whatever else I had to do.
So are you planning on coming back next year?
I'm sure I'll be back next year. If not, they hate me or something because they...
You've done something wrong.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. I'll be like, what did I do? You know, but you know I would have, so...
Sure. So why do you like it so much? I assume that you play other music festivals.
Yeah,
and
sure
so
do.
Maybe what's unique about this one?
What I liked about this one was just... was kind of... Actually, it sounds weird, but I liked seeing it grow from being that first year when it was at the Greenhouse Grill, and like the water pipe broke.
The water pipe broke?
Yeah, like it was going to be at Greenhouse Grill, and then everyone was setting up, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue in the front yard, this big water pipe shot up, and all this water was shooting all over. And so, like, the water to the Greenhouse Grill just was gone. And so they had no restrooms, and so somebody got on the phone and started talking to the guy from George's, and... And that guy said, okay, but I got another band coming in at 9, so we had to change the whole festival. And so now it's become this big thing, and it's the Walton Art Center, is that what it's called?
Walton Art Center,
And it's just neat to see, like, all these different bands, you know, and we got some of my best friends from all over the United States of America who are also songwriters playing at it now. And so we all stay in this dorm room, and it's like Buddy Fest or something, because it's like friends I don't see, but and then we're all together, and then yeah, it's kind of songwriting nerd fest, I should say.
I heard there were some late night jam sessions up at Mount Sequoia where you guys were staying.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Yeah.
So how is that different for you? Because you guys see each other backstage when you're switching sets and stuff like that, but you guys actually got to, like you said, kind of hang out at the dorm and just chill. But what is it like for you to be there and get to jam with some friends and maybe some people that you consider heroes or inspiration for your music?
Oh yeah, well, we were hoping John Prine would show up, but
didn't
happen. No.
Aww.
But I gave him a wink. Wants to sure. Hope that he would know what that meant, but that didn't work.
Oh, because you're a fan of his.
Yeah, I love John Prine. But I know it's really great, afterwards, that's kind of the magic for us. Because we love to perform and everything, but it's always who's going to be, which one of our friends that we don't ever see is going to be there so we can, see other families doing, see what's going on. And then to hear their new bits of songs is my little treasure. Show me your scraps. What are you working on? And then they unload their scraps of songs, and you're like, "Oh, that's great!" Oh, so, and then you get to watch that little song grow into a flower, and it's really neat.
Do you guys help each other out? Do you guys ask this is what I'm working on? What do you think? Or do you guys just kind of?
Well, it depends. If you've me and the gentleman Gregory Isakoff, we've been writing songs together for years, and so we're always trying to get away from everybody and go hide it in the corner and show each other the scraps and what if my scrap will fit with his scrap, and maybe we have a beginning of a bigger scrap, And so we're always doing that, trying to paste things together. And
you talk about scraps of your own music, but do you guys play other people's songs as well? I heard that you did a Bruce Springsteen cover.
Oh, well, I love Bruce Springsteen. So sometimes I like to just stay home and just listen to Bruce Springsteen on the couch, like the Ghost of Tom Joad record, or Nebraska, or Devils and Dust, or just lay down and he's an excellent songwriter and if I do a cover of somebody that's not a friend, it's almost 90% chance it's a Bruce Springsteen cover.
Mainly, so just a big fan.
Mainly because I've listened to him so many times that I won't forget the lyrics.
Yes.
So.
And also, I mentioned earlier when you were here for Roots Festival, you got roped into teaching people two-step.
Oh, yeah,
you
that's
and,
great.
You and Shannon Wurst were doing that. How did that go?
I actually taught Shannon how to two-step many years ago. So.
Did you really?
Yeah. I kind of get flattered. I like saying that because I know she's rolling her eyes back right now if she heard that.
Well, I had seen her two-step before and kept thinking, wow, she's really good. And so when you came in, you were both teaching. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense because I've seen her and she's really good at it. I didn't realize that you taught her.
Well, she knew how to do a little bit, but I've shown her some of the spins and we worked some stuff out. And there's a festival called Curva Folk Festival, and it's an 18-day festival, and I've been teaching every day for an hour, a two-step lesson and swing basic lesson and stuff. And it's like my other little nerd world. I really like to dance, and I think it's a lot of fun. And it's the rhythms that you're dancing on. If you're dancing, you're actually dancing 3-4 rhythm over a 4-4 rhythm on the music. And so it creates this weird juxtaposition that is kind of unique. I can't remember. I'm getting real nerdy here, so excuse
That's
me.
That's okay.
But it really creates a different kind of rhythm playing when you're playing guitar if you know how to do that kind of dance. And so it's really helped my guitar playing in a roundabout way.
Well, how did you learn to two-step?
When I was a little kid, I had a bunch of sisters and a mom that loved 50s music. Uh-huh. And so we would always just kind of dance like that all the time. And then the older I got, I just started noticing that. I remember in middle school, I'd be like, I see these people dancing. I'm like, God, that's so bad. But I was still scared to do it,
Sure.
And then I just eventually started working on it and getting better and better to a point where it was just always there,
Well, you brought your guitar with you.
Sure.
You said you're going to play a song for us here. And actually, we mentioned Gregory Allen Isakoff, who played at the Roots Festival this year, helped you, or you both worked on this song together?
Yeah, we pretty much just meet all the time, and we just put our scraps together and try to form songs. And this is one that we did that with many, many years ago,
Many years ago.
Yeah, 6 years ago or something, 7 years ago, I don't know.
And what's it called?
It's called Red and Gold.
Okay.
Thank you. whispers words that were once unsaid. And I'll be there down by the river, chasing after laughter that you and I once shared. Take me back 20 miles west, where I first saw the moonlight shine upon your dress. And I'll be there down by the stream and underneath the wildwood and that crooked crow's tree.
Song.
Hey, thank you.
What was the inspiration for that one?
It's kind of like an inspirational song about dying, I guess. I don't know. That sounds funny, but.
No, that makes sense.
Well, it's just kind of a lot of, getting older and realizing that, you built this house, and eventually it's just going to be one person being there in the house, Now you have to rely on that the harvest will take care of itself and the house. We'll keep your loved one warm, and mm-hmm. Kind of like that.
Right. You've been a songwriter and a performer for a while now, but one of the interesting things I found out about you while you're here doing Roots Festival was that you used to be a park ranger.
Uh-huh, sure did.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I kept playing really bad gigs for a long time, and I was just getting burned out from the music world. And I thought, what would it be? It'd be so neat to do something other than music. And then I just figured out, I had a little pipe dream my whole life to become park ranger, and then I just figured out how to do it. And I tried to leave music behind, but even when I was driving out there, I was like, I'm so excited that I can finally write songs and not have to play, gigs all the time. Mm-hmm. I could have a normal job and come home at 5,
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for about a year in the Joshua Tree National Park, and it was just a wonderful experience. I wrote tons of songs because mm-hmm. I didn't have to travel all the time. And I didn't know anybody for a while, so I could just come home and, I didn't know anybody. I had a lot of time until I started watching Lost.
Oh,
and that ruined a couple weekends. But,
of course. You get really into that.
Yeah.
And just time's gone.
But anyway, so I wrote a bunch of songs, and they're all kind of based off the Mojave Desert. And I ended up taking care of Graham Parsons Memorial Site out there in Joshua Tree. And Anyways, a great time, like just waking up at 5:30, you know, and that was kind of rough.
That's a little early for me.
But revegetating a burned area and learning all about propagating, and it was good times, yeah.
So what was finally the final spark that's like, okay, I'm going to do music?
Well, when you walk away from something, you kind of realize how beautiful it was, and you realize what you didn't like about it. But at the time, you're like just frustrated with every aspect of it. You know, And then I realized when I was going back that I was just going to really focus on being a songwriter, and I wasn't going to do the gigs that involved me being in jam sessions or anything like that. And I was going to take that route of just working on songs. And having the time alone in Joshua Tree made me realize, like, that it's okay, that's fine in life to just be the songwriter, that I don't have to participate in jam sessions or spend hours trying to defend myself in the bluegrass community because I wrote a 3-chord song I don't know, it was just a real wake-up call, like, to realize who you were, kind of. And then before that, I was teaching guitar lessons, and I didn't want to do that anymore either. I just wanted to. So I kind of discovered myself being a park ranger.
So it worked out well.
It worked out really well, yeah.
And back to performing and being on the road, and you're in town this weekend. You have on Saturday, played at the a house concert, and on Sunday in Eureka Springs.
Yes.
And then what's next for you?
Let me see. I go back to Austin, and I play a little town called Bernie. And then I fly to Kansas the following week to play the pig roast.
Oh, that sounds fun.
I can't even think of the name of the town.
But
it's a small town 2 hours northwest of Kansas City.
Oh, okay. So. All right. And then some downtime or?
And then I have like 2 weeks off, which I'm really excited. So, yeah. Which is really exciting. Yeah.
And then back on the road again or?
I can't really think of what I'm doing in November, but at the end of November, I run a songwriter retreat called the Crooked Crow Songwriter Retreat down by the Mexico border in West Texas with actually Brian Himbry that lives here in town.
Mm-hmm. You kind of lead it, but are you working on songs for yourself as well?
I try to, yeah. The whole mission of that songwriter retreat is to let the topic go, like not be so uber focused on like, I want to write a song just about my grandmother and this and that. Instead, just try to find lines and try to paste things together and then create meaning after you've done that. And try to reshape it to whatever it becomes. And so when I'm there, I'm like, we're working all these, like, we're cutting out words from books and giving people, like, old postcards with some words on it, when I'm there, yeah, I'm starting to work on new songs. It's just really inspiring, and you see people getting inspired that have not written songs in years. And if I start talking about it too much, I'll start writing out.
Well, I understand on the way up here to Fayetteville that you had you stopped and looked at a place because you might be doing a songwriter workshop here in the spring.
Yeah, in the spring we're going to be at
Fort Smith.
Yeah, thank you. I'm still new to this area.
Oh, absolutely.
So to me, everything's like College Street right now.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to do another one because the one down by Mexico, like it fills up so fast that we only have like maybe 40 at the most. And so Brian and I are doing one up here in spring at Lake Fort Smith, and it's going to have like 60 people.
And people can keep up with that by going to your website, I guess?
Yeah, it's just J, WagnerMusic.com.
Okay. And we were talking about you coming up with songs for yourself as well, and your latest album is Disappear. And do you want to play us a song off of that?
Sounds great.
Okay. And why don't you tell me what you're going to play and what it's about?
So this is a song called When I Find All You. And I simply was walking, thinking how I was a loser because I hadn't written a song in a couple months. And this lady walks past me, and she's talking to her girlfriend. And she goes, "Oh, honey, I left my laughter at the river years ago." And then I was like, score, thank you. And then I just simply wrote this song. And it's called When I Find All You. And a bunch of people have covered it. A lady named Victoria Williams.
Really?
Covered it with a band called Calexico.
Yes.
And that was really exciting, and it's just sitting there like it hasn't been released yet, and I keep waiting like any second I'll get a phone call to have it released. But anyways, here's my version.
All right.
And thank you for having me here again.
Absolutely. Pleasure. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
beneath the river, or the smile that you hear. But deep inside your closet, I want to find the forgiveness that you planted by these irises. And I want to find that dream that you gave away to a stranger, or the poem that you wrote when you're crying in the cafe, or the sad song you sang when you disappeared in that moonlight. So when I find all of you, I'm gonna put you back together. I'm gonna build you strong again. I'm gonna love you in the morning, and if you'll be my darling, oh, I'll be your darling too. Amongst the birch trees, or the love that you kept, the secret in your basement, or the strength that you laid out for that autumn rain to wash and wash and wash away. And I want to find that sorrow you left out for the wind to tease, or the fear that you stitched and deep inside your pockets. I want to find those stories, darling, that you drowned glass of wine. So when I find all of you, I'm gonna put you back together. I'm gonna build you strong again. I'm gonna love you in the morning, and if you'll be my darling, oh, I'll be your darling too.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Over the course of a year, we conduct thousands of interviews for Ozarks at Large, and we look forward to almost all of them, but not every single one of them. Case in point, recently Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked with Ithi Agnihotri Madolkar. He didn't mind talking to her, he just wasn't pleased about the subject of their conversation. Her move away from Northwest Arkansas to Phoenix. Her husband, Mihir, landed a job there after completing his PhD in engineering at the University of Arkansas. Here's part of their conversation recorded before Ithi moved away.
One of the most commonly asked questions I get, if not the most commonly, over the last year,
right,
if someone recognized my voice or knew me or heard that I worked at KUAF, invariably, almost always the first thing they would say is, would you pronounce that name?
It should be a party game. Spelling and pronouncing my name. Okay. So do you want me to pronounce it?
Please.
Okay. It's Ithi. Mm-hmm. It's pronounced, okay, it's spelled as I-T-I, but it is pronounced as I-T-H-I. So it's Ithi.
Ithi.
Agnihotri.
Now that's your maiden name.
Yes, that's my maiden name.
Agnihotri, right.
And Madolkar.
Right.
I still am not sure if people got it or not, but there's really nothing I can do.
How did you end up here?
I completed my master's in Louisiana in mass communication, and then I came to Arkansas after I got married. So here was here. He was already pursuing his PhD, and I joined him. I had worked in radio for 4 years back in India, but that was entertainment radio. So I was hoping I could get an internship, something, just something to, you know, put my time and talent to good use somewhere here. And I just one afternoon, I was dropping off my resumes at the newspaper, at some places, and then I just walked in at the, you know, it was after, it was lunchtime, I guess, and there was no one here but Rusty, our, one of our...
Who's also since left us because he got a job.
Right. Rusty, one of our work studies, was here, and I said, I need someone, I want to talk to someone, I want an internship here. And he directed me to Rick. I went straight to his office and I said, I really need a job. I'm looking for a job. So he said, well, you can start with an internship. He said, okay. And I dropped off my resume. And then he said, Kyle Kellums, our news director, will get back to you, which you did not. For 3 weeks, I did not hear from you. And I gave up. I was like, this man is not going to call me and I'm done and I won't work ever again. And but one of my strengths is persistence. So I kept emailing you. I think I emailed you after four weeks after I dropped off my resume here. Mm-hmm. And then finally you got back. And then I met you next day or something. And then...
So you started pretty soon after that.
Yes.
And the internship then turned into a job.
Yes. You were kind enough to.
What did you think when you started here?
I first of all didn't think I'd be on the air because of the accent. Mm-hmm. I did not. Yeah, that was something that you threw at me, and I was like, really? I have to be on the air? Will you let me be on the air? That is amazing. You are awesome. But as I started working and getting the hang of things, it just became, you know, how you don't really set out to do something, but when you actually start doing it, it just makes so much sense. And you start thinking that I was always meant to do this. And, you know, all this while I had been building up or, you know, kind of preparing for this in some way or the other, but you never realize it. But then there's something falls in your lap and you're like, yes, this was meant to be.
You took to Northwest Arkansas.
I did. I love Fayetteville just like maybe even as much as I love India. A little more probably because it's really somewhere I've, you know, I had a family, you know, me here and I, this was the first place I moved to after I got married. So there's that attachment. Then this was my first job in the US and you guys are fabulous. So that will always be some.
What did you get to do here that you'll remember? Any stories or any experiences that are especially fond for you?
Can I say all of them? I was counting the number of stories that I did, and this is probably a much, much lower number than you know, your work, but I did like 200 stories, phone interviews, everything mm-hmm. included. And every one of them was so... so awesome.
When we started doing The Daily Show, which is a couple years ago now, the people who were there for the launch, Antoinette, Jacqueline, myself, Christina pretty much came on mm-hmm. pretty soon after that.
Right.
And you. I mean, this, we were a team, and we didn't really know what we were doing.
We did not.
With a show every day for an hour.
I don't know how we did this.
I still don't know how we do it, actually. And often, you and Antoinette especially would be the voices of reason because my imagination writes checks that reality can't cash, that we could do this show or we could do that or we could add this. But I think one reason we were able to do The Daily Show is because all of us, I don't put, you know, there are other people who've helped along the way. Luke mm-hmm. Gramlich, who hopefully will hear. He's getting his master's right now, but hopefully he'll do some stories for us again. And Meredith down in Central Arkansas, a lot of people. But those of us that were here every day, we did it together. And I think it was your enthusiasm and your why don't we try this attitude. I don't know if we could have done The Daily Show without the group of people we have that have come together. And so you said that we were fabulous and that you were happy, but I am so happy. I think, I don't believe in fate or kismet or anything like that, but I think you being persistent and coming in, one of the reasons we have been able to do what we've done. And
that is so sweet. That is so sweet.
You have been an integral part of our team, not just Ozark Large, but at KUAF. And I don't think there's any way we can thank you, those of us on the staff, for truly your enthusiasm and, you know, knowing just exactly when is the right time to have the dance party in the hall, turn up the music.
Sorry.
No. And you're going to be sorely missed. I didn't want to think about this, but it's an inevitable part of life, and it's an inevitable part of being in a town that has a somewhat transient population because of the college, because of the university. But thank you. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for coming in that fourth time and meeting with us and with your story ideas.
There's something I want to say, which I think would pretty much sum what this means, this time, this moment. And this is a quote. This is a quote from Reading Lolita in Tehran. This was written by an Iranian author called Azar Nafisi. And this really sums up what I'm feeling right now. You get a strange feeling when you're about to leave a place. Like you'll not only miss the people you love, but you'll also miss the person you are now, at this time, and this place. Because you'll never be this way ever again.
Best of luck to you and Mihir in Arizona. I don't know if you can right now, but it would be great if you could just say one more time for Ozarks at Large.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudolkar.
Mount Sequoia Retreat and Conference Center features Music on the Mountain the first Tuesday of every month. October welcomes Dennis Collins on Tuesday the 2nd at 7 p.m. Walk-up tickets are available, with proceeds benefiting the restoration of Clapp Auditorium. Food and coffee will be provided. MountSequoia.org for more information. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Pitcher, Oklahoma. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. Have a happy Monday.